Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Tim, and this is Get On Board,
a podcast about games worth playing.
This week, we're going to be doing a bit of a review session, talking about a couple of games we chose. We said in our last, at the end of our last podcast, we mentioned them, so I know that you guys have just been waiting for Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, which might turn out to be argument about Deception, Murder in Hong Kong.
We might not get to the second game. We might just argue about Deception the whole time.
Oh, but wow, we got to end on something, you know, a positive note. Something that we probably will agree with.
That's
I think
true.
We'll agree on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, which is Hive. So, I want to play for you the sound of murder. That's me shaking the box in front of the microphone. In hindsight, it's not as amusing as I'd hoped it would be. Let's get to Deception, Murder in Hong Kong. Summary of this game. It's a social deduction game. It is one that has an interesting twist. Andrew, when I first introduced it to you, I said, you know, it's kind of like Codenames met a social deduction game. Your face turned pale, I think.
Yeah. Picture this. You're walking the streets of Hong Kong with seven of your friends. It's a dry night. Or maybe it's a damp day. Or a foggy evening. Maybe you're at a school. Or a restaurant. Is it a wet restaurant? Or a dry restaurant? And there was a murder. And the murderer is at this table with you. And he committed the murder with one of these eight objects. I guess
like,
one's a murder weapon.
Like a blender.
He killed someone with a blender or because of a blender.
And
which
somehow
is the more interesting
that person's
story.
Hair is involved.
Maybe he tangled their hair in the blender.
Or perhaps their puppet.
Puppet and hair could get tangled without even a blender.
Or even more sinister, a machine. This card
Ooh.
Literally just says machine on it. That's
okay.
It. Okay.
So the premise of Deception, Murder in Hong Kong is that there has been a murder. And the chief investigator will be helping the other players who are investigators figure out which one of you is secretly the murderer. So in the game, every one of you are going to have eight cards in front of you. You will have four murder weapons and four related items, and you will each be dealt a role. One of you will be the murderer. Similar to Werewolf or Mafia, you will all go to sleep. The chief investigator will tell the murderer to wake up and pick which two of his item cards are the actual murder. Then everyone will wake up, and from that point on, the chief investigator will be given hints, will be giving hints using a series of clue boards, which hopefully will point all of the real investigators towards the two cards, the two specific cards that the murderer used to perpetrate the crime. So throughout the game, the players will make accusations. They will ask the chief investigator if a certain person and two certain item cards are the correct combination. And unless they are exactly correct, the chief investigator can only say no.
So let's say that you were the unlucky one to have chosen the murderer card. What you're doing is, you know, as people are, you talked about these little clue things that he's giving, right? I don't know, have you mentioned these
yet? I mentioned
them
briefly.
Okay, great. So yeah, so the investigator is putting some hints, like let's say there's cause of death, right? And so he puts suffocation. Well, people are going to be looking at the cards in front of each other going, well, what could have possibly caused suffocation? Is it the stuffed toy? Is it the spinning top? Is it the tissue? Is it the hanger? Maybe he puts a location of crime, playground, and people are looking for the second clue item, and they're thinking, well, you know, it's probably not red wine. It's probably not earrings. It's probably not a rose, but who knows? You know, could it be the bicycle, or could it be the, I don't know, backpack or USB flash drive, or who knows what else is on these cards here. And so it just sort of becomes a game where people around the table are attempting to figure out whose cards best match the clues given, and where people try to misdirect. And it isn't terribly obvious always, because the investigator has to put some marker. There are a number of these boards that are out that have these types of hints on them, like victim's identity, duration of crime, murderer's personality. And I don't know, maybe the murderer's personality, maybe there isn't really a good personality for red wine, so he puts, you know, arrogant or something. And so it can be a little bit difficult to pinpoint exactly what these two cards are. And that's pretty much the game. As he puts these pieces out one by one, people sort of argue, and then, oh, there are these phases where you're supposed to stop. Although, practically, this faded in our last game. It just kind of went into a big conversation. You're supposed to stop, and everybody sort of presents
the game differentiates between a presentation phase and an accusation phase, but you kind of just blend into one big discussion, and each person can only accuse once. So if you are wrong, you can no longer make accusations.
So let's talk about reception to this game. This game is enormously popular. Okay.
Yeah,
it ranks pretty high on Board Game Geek. It gets an incredible number of very positive reviews. Right. Admittedly, it was a lot different than I expected it to be. So I'll also say a little bit personal here about, I'm actually not a fan of social deduction games.
What?
So
I had no idea.
And one of the main things I don't like about them is, I'm especially not a fan when they give you little to no information to go on.
Right.
So, like the original Mafia, with sort of a basic set of characters, where basically it's everybody opens their eyes, people start accusing each other and trying to figure out who's smirking funnily or who's, you know, that is, to me, is just like, oh,
right,
an exercise in stupidity.
Right.
It's one of the few situations where I would rather just not game at all than engage in that kind of
thing. This game is Hidden Roles without it just devolving into a big argument. So you're right. Werewolf and Mafia give you absolutely no information or very little information.
Resistance is better.
Resistance, Mafia de Cuba, those give you a little bit of information. I would say Deception gives you the most of the social deduction games I've played.
I can't think of one that gives you more.
Right.
Two Rooms and a Boom comes close, but...
Mm. Two Rooms and a Boom doesn't have enough information in it for my taste.
But it depends on how people play.
It does.
If they're being more aggressive about card reveals and color reveals. But you're right. No, this is like the most open information.
Right.
The answer is sitting right out there on the board.
And you just need to figure it out.
And you just need to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a big plus. I think my biggest plus for the game is that anyone can play this game. Mm-hmm. Literally anyone. I saw my wife's aunt and uncle, who categorically do not play board games, sit down and play this one and ask to play it again.
Right.
You know, one of our friends, his wife, called and said, hey, what was the name of that murder game again?
Mm-hmm.
Does not play games at all. Really hit it off with this one. I've seen it hit a really great reception when we've played it. There is incredible accessibility here, and I think that's Deception's biggest strength.
Right.
You can pick this up and be rolling with strangers off the street. I mean, it is very simple
and not just
very easy to go with.
Non-board gaming strangers.
Yes,
I invited two friends over to my house that do not like board games. Yes, I actually have such friends. but I invited, it's a couple I've known for years, but board gaming is never something we've even attempted together because I know that they just don't like board games. We gave this one a shot. I couldn't believe it when they both said, hey, yeah, let's play another round. Ooh, yeah, let's play another round. They were really interested and excited about this game. So that is, accessibility to the non-gamer is a huge plus. And I can tell you, too, some of these people, I know them.
Right.
They wouldn't like to play Mafia.
Right.
It would stress them out.
Right.
But this is a lot less stressful than a lot of social deduction games because, again, it's just trying, it's more a word association game than it is a...
Well, unlike something like the Resistance or Two Rooms and a Boom, where you have fairly even teams, this is one versus many. So it's more like Shadows Over Camelot in that regard. It's a lot closer to a co-op. So it is. Which makes it more accessible, I think, because, you know, I've seen Two Rooms and a Boom or Resistance just devolve into a giant shouting match. That's not really fun. Here, it's much more cooperative, and if the murderer is going to get away with it, they have to at least pretend to cooperate with the rest of the group. Right. So you don't really get the open conflict. You still have accusations because everyone's trying to figure it out, but you do know that only one person is bad, so eventually, you know, some of you will come to be trusted by the group.
Now, I know that you are not a big fan of this game.
Yes, I have some tragic moments to go with my magic moments.
Okay, tell us about the tragic.
Okay, so I have three problems that I wrote down, but I feel like they're all related. So let's just get them all out of the way and then we can kind of talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that really bothered me about this game is the weapon and evidence cards feel like a gamey construction. The game differentiates between the murder weapons, which are your top row of cards, and evidence or something connected to the crime, which are your bottom row. But practically, there's no real difference between the cards, and there's no way for the clue giver to differentiate between the cards, so the distinction between them is useless. There's no point to it. There's no way that it helps the clue-giving framework.
I'll actually agree with you on this one, and I'll even take it a step further. You know, it's not called a weapons. It's mm-hmm. called a weapons card. It's called a means.
A means.
So there's this means card and a clue card.
Right.
And what is that?
Right.
I almost really wish they had stuck to the old trope of person,
who,
location,
where,
weapon. I think that would have been a lot.
Yeah. It's odd, and the murderer is constrained in that he has to pick one card from his top row and one card from his bottom row.
Right.
I don't see the point to that. I don't see the point in the design. It just feels like a construction to me, which kind of leads me to my second problem with the game. Because there's no difference between the two sets of cards, it's very hard for the clue giver to give any sort of subtle hints. It feels like almost anyone can be the clue giver because your clue tiles are frustratingly vague. So any sort of clues within this framework are going to kind of half guide you to the murderer. So it's hard to play the clue giver role poorly, but it's also not rewarding to play it well because when you have a multiple choice list, okay, location of crime, you must choose between these six options. Sometimes one just does not help at all, and you don't have enough agency to get rid of unhelpful clues that you've given to the group. So I feel like the clue giver role kind of plays itself.
Oh, see, and I don't agree with that. I think you have to play it to the group just like you do in a game like Codenames, where you're trying to connect three words,
mm-hmm.
and you're thinking, how does this person across from me think? Are they going to associate poisoning with ink or... yes, the clues are vague, but you couldn't have them be more direct or the game would just be way too easy to solve.
That's true. However, let's talk about my third tragic moment.
Mm-hmm.
The murderer does not have enough opportunity to defend himself in this game. The murderer is almost always found out, which means that when I play as the clue giver, I'm frustrated because my hints are not specific enough. And yet, even within that vague framework, the murderer is almost always found out. So the game does play itself when you're the clue giver. It's very easy to see what your best clue to give is. So it's rather boring to be the clue giver, I think. And conversely, when you're the murderer, you're kind of stuck. Unlike, say, Mafia di Cuba or Shadows Over Camelot, you can't just lie low if you are the traitor or the one who done it, you know? Lying low is not a valid strategy. However, speaking actively is not a valid strategy either because it doesn't give you enough opportunities to lead them down the wrong trail. And if you talk too much, you're going to draw attention to yourself. And just as the clues become more and more obvious that it's you, you're just stuck. You can't contribute to the discussion. You can't say nothing. I feel like the murderer is too easily discovered in this.
It is true that the majority of games that we have played, mm-hmm. the murderer loses.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the games that we have played were not played with the witness either.
Ah.
And the witness, I think, is across is is kind of a mitigator for that.
Okay.
So the murderer then has the opportunity. It's kind of like, oh, who is that? Merlin, I think, in Resistance Avalon, mm-hmm. where right. you can call out the person that you think opened their eyes when in that initial setup phase, and the
right.
forensic investigator, whoever this is called, pointed to you as the murderer. So the witness knows who you are. So that does help.
Okay.
But I do see your point, because I have felt this in some of the games where I thought, man, there's nothing I can do. It's so obvious mm-hmm. the way it's played out. There's mm-hmm. nothing I can do. But I do think the more experienced you get at this game, the more you... It's really important if you're the murderer to take some time mm-hmm. to really think about the two cards you choose.
Yeah.
And not just choose them willy-nilly, because you've got to pick a combo that's going
to... But that does not lend to an accessible game. So I feel like the game is shooting itself in the foot. I would rather see, and I'll mention these later in the review, I'd almost rather see, if you're going to have a super accessible deduction game, let's have not one of the players be the murderer, where potentially you could have someone who has no clue how to play that well. I think that the game's accessibility is also its biggest weakness. I think it's very shallow. And could you play this and find the depth there with a consistent group of people and really get into a metagame? It's possible, but I wouldn't say it's designed that way.
No, I don't think it is. I think this is a good light party game.
Right.
And that, okay, to your point, too, about it doesn't make it accessible when the murderer can't, doesn't have enough means to defend himself. Well, it did make it accessible to everybody else around the table who found him.
Right.
And it sort of reminds me of, I think there are some games that sort of have this dilemma to them. Splendor gets called a mindless game.
Uh-huh.
People can think, well, the game just kind of plays itself. It doesn't really matter what you do. Just a bunch of people taking random chips and completing random goals and seeing what happens. Yeah, you can play that way. Right. That's the beauty of the game. It's accessible in that anybody can do the mechanic of the thing and make it
right.
work. But to play it well takes some thought, mm-hmm. and not everybody's going to do that.
But unlike Splendor, I don't see that there's that much here in this game. I don't see that meat on the bones to dig into it and try to play it well. I just don't think it's worth it.
And yet, could we be overanalyzing that portion of it? Because in the end, every time I pull this game out, my group has had fun. Well, except for you.
Yeah. I had fun despite my existential angst. We played the game back to back to back, and then I tried it as the forensic investigator. And that was just kind of the nail in the coffin for me. However, I think I'm going to surprise you when I tell you that I have Mafia de Cuba listed for sale, and I'm probably going to buy Deception.
What?
I think I just surprised him. And I'm going to tell you why. Social deduction games are not my niche.
I'm flabbergasted.
Even Mafia de Cuba, which up until now is my favorite, is not really my thing. I find them stressful and not very fun. But when I host a game night, I'm not always playing the games that I find the most fun. And in this category, I will tell you that Deception, Murder in Hong Kong is the most accessible and the most fun Hidden Roles game I've encountered. I think it is a great party game. I think the fact that you can play it with anyone is a huge strength. And despite the flaws that I see in the game, though I will never love it, I think it has a place in my collection.
And that's weird, because you and I have just landed in the same place. It's just sort of that we kind of went a little bit different.
Right.
Our dispositions toward it are a bit different.
Right.
I'm more forgiving of the game's faults. You're a little less forgiving of the game's faults. But in the end, I think we both agree, to Andrew and to me, it sounds like this is not a game that either of us are really that thrilled to play.
Right.
But it's because neither of us really like social deduction right. games that much.
Right. And I think that's why you mentioned it in your high floor pick five
right.
A couple weeks ago. It will never be that magical game for you or I, like different styles of games. but as a game night host, I cannot deny that this game is good. And if you like social deduction games, I think this is the best of the bunch. I think you absolutely should be the person who goes and finds the depth in this game, because I think you
could... You're flooring me.
I think you could make it work. It's not for me, but far be it for me to pan a game because I personally do not like it. I see the value in this game. And I think that Deception might be the best of a somewhat flawed genre of games that I don't love. But if Deception's the best of them and my group is requesting Hidden Roles games, I'd rather play this one than any of the others. So for its sheer accessibility and its simplicity, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong gets my vote.
I'm taking off my boxing gloves that I had really planned to use. I worked out for an hour before this review, planning on the fight.
Don't take them off.
Okay.
However.
Oh, no. Oh, you're doing a mid-review.
I'm doing a
mid-review turnaround.
I'm doing a knockoff, non-name brand mid-review turnaround. Non-British and in no way affiliated with Pipe Down and Take a Chair. However, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong is by no means the best cooperative game you could play.
Well, no.
Or even accessible party game that you could play. So, I have a couple counter recommendations. My first one, we've already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Two Rooms and a Boom. It's not quite Hidden Roles, but I think it's more flexible and it's harder to screw up just by its nature of game design. So I think if you're really stuck on the Hidden Roles thing and Deception doesn't do it for you, I would encourage you to go take a look at Two Rooms and a Boom.
Two Rooms, every time you play it, it never fails. It's hard for us probably to find consistent groups to play this game. It's every time we do game nights, there's always some variance. You're always having to teach it to new people.
Right.
But I will say that I plan usually to do three games of this in a session. The first game, people are a little bit more timid. By the third game, there are a good number of players that feel like this was an epic experience.
Right. Because they figured out how the system works.
And that's its big plus. And that's what Deception can never be. Deception can never be epic.
Right. Okay. So now let's wade a little deeper into the waters. I'm going to shave off some accessibility here. And I want to talk about Mysterium. Because I think that Mysterium is just about my perfect cooperative game. Unlike Deception, this game is actually fun for the clue giver because they are constrained, but they are not limited. And this game encourages actual creativity in the hint giving. So if you, like me, find yourself being the player who ends up being the game master most of the time, I can tell you that Mysterium is far more satisfying than Deception was for me. Far more satisfying. Sometimes you won't be able to give a helpful hint, but that mechanic in Mysterium of using Dixit-esque surreal cards to give hints to people and encouraging that creative thinking through artwork,
right?
That to me is just way more interesting than the word association.
Okay, now here's a counter, and I'm not saying this is a really strong minus for me in the game, but I can see where it can be a minus for some people. Those same friends that aren't gamers at all would have been overwhelmed by Mysterium if I had pulled that out at the get-go.
Right. And like I said, you are sacrificing some accessibility here, which is why I still recommend Deception, Murder in Hong Kong. However, think of these counter recommendations. If Deception, Murder in Hong Kong is the little fizz of the wave on the beach tickling your toes, these recommendations are maybe the toe deep, the ankle deep, the lower shin deep depths of the water that can be explored. If you want
up
to
your bum deep. So sorry. That was my attempt at British humor, which wasn't very good.
I have one more recommendation here. I have one more recommendation. And I actually hesitate to give this a recommendation because I've only spent about 5 or 6 hours on this game so far. But if you really like deduction games, but you want to avoid the unpleasantness of one of your players being the murderer, you should look at Sherlock Holmes consulting detective. Because this game, with a couple sheets of paper, throws you into an incredible framework of deduction that is accessible, that is cooperative, that can be played with a diverse group of different ranges of gaming experience, anything from solo to even 5 or 6 or 7 players. This game is my perfect deduction game. So if the deduction part of deception interests you and you really want to sink your teeth into something that really works your brain more, Sherlock Holmes would be the up to your bum depth, if you will, because
you don't, I mean, I think that's up past the navel, bro. I mean, that's a heavy game. I mean, it's for somebody with, this is not a game for those with a short attention span. This is a game for somebody who's going to get out a notebook, write down clues,
true,
be taking notes,
but
trying to connect the ideas that you're encountering.
In terms of actual gaming rules, there's very little game there, and yet the experience is really snappy. It's similar to perhaps going out with your friends to an escape room or doing a murder mystery at dinner. I would compare it to one of those things, even more so than a board game almost, which is not a strike against it in any case, but I don't know. My main critique with Deception, despite recommending it, is that I don't find enough depth in it. So I realize that the games that I brought up maybe sacrifice some or a lot of the accessibility, which is Deception's biggest strength. However, because I found the accessibility to be Deception's biggest weakness as well as biggest strength, I think that some of these other games are going to be more satisfying in the long term.
I want to backpedal a moment and go back to Mysterium.
Okay.
Why is there room for both Mysterium and Deception in your collection? That I don't get.
Okay.
Because it isn't too terribly difficult to make the leap from Deception complexity to Mysterium complexity.
Right.
They're not that far apart.
Well, I think the first thing I would say would be the word association versus picture association is different. I find the picture association more satisfying, but I agree. They are very similar games, and I think I would keep Deception because it is a hidden roles game, which, again, some people in my group really love those. That's why I have Mafia de Cuba and Two Rooms and a Boom already. So it is a hidden roles game where Mysterium is a pure cooperative game. And again, I just have to come back to the sheer accessibility. You are right. I could play Deception, Murder in Hong Kong with anyone. But I think this might be the first instance of a game that I could truly call a gateway game. Because I feel like when people say gateway game, they're saying it with the caveat, yeah, but this game isn't really fun for experienced gamers. I would say this game matches that description for me. I just don't find it that fun. I don't see the depth there. But as a board game, a gaming host, I have to recognize that this is a valuable addition to my collection.
See, if you gave me both Mysterium and Deception and held a gun to my head and said, choose one, I would say, forget it. I'm never doing another podcast with you again. How dare you hold a gun to my head? What's wrong with you?
I would choose Mysterium.
But then if... getting to the game choice itself, I mean, there's no doubt that I would choose Mysterium.
Right.
But Deception has an advantage. Time.
That's true.
See, Deception is a game where if it scratches that itch, and it scratches it in about 15 minutes, and then it's done. And then if they want to play again, another 15 minutes, and then it's done, and then everybody's going, hey, what else can we do?
Right.
And that's where I think it belongs in the game collection. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is... I think... It can be the main course for lighter groups, but for any group of gamers, it's going to be a 1-2 shot, and then you're going to move on to something else. But it's going to be an enjoyable 1-2 shot.
Sure.
Come on, set up. See, that's the problem I have with Mysterium. The only real problem I have with Mysterium is the time. Holy cow, the setup. And then,
it takes a good hour and a half. I agree. So I think to compare this game to another game that's left my collection, Deception would definitely be a better choice for me than Codenames. I think it's got the similar word association, plays large groups way better. I don't know who the people are out there who are playing Codenames in large groups
at all.
But
Deception is a
totally
four-player
blows
game
that out of the
tops.
Water. Yeah, yeah.
It's a 2-4 player game. That's it.
Whereas Deception elegantly handles what is it, 8, 9 that it plays up to?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, you know, for the purposes of a game night, that's a large group game. It's not huge like Two Rooms and a Boom would be at a con.
Yeah, actually, it's more than that. Hold on. I'll look at the box. 4 to 12 players.
4 to 12 players. Now, that alone is a reason for me to buy this game.
You and I also have not plumbed the depths of all the roles that occur at the higher player
counts. That's true. So perhaps this review should have an asterisk on the side, although is any review truly complete? I would say that for the accessibility, for the high player count, for just the general high floor of this game, mm-hmm. in a 20-minute package, it's unsurpassed.
It goes in my recommended bucket.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't go in my great game bucket. It's not an example of greatness.
Right.
But it's an example of a game that fills a particular niche very well.
Right. And, you know, I have plenty of those games because I host a game night. And above all, what I want to do is not play some great games. I want to hang out with some great people. So at the end of the day, if Deception is a game that helps me do that, I can overlook its flaws.
This is the sound of Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, being put away.
Man, the sound of murder, ladies and gentlemen.
I tried to get a really good box flatulence out of that, but it didn't quite work.
That was a semi-good box flatulence.
And see if our listeners can guess the next game.
We've told them about it 3 or 4 times.
Man, yeah, I know, but I just had to... These Bakelite, or however you say that...
Bakelite
tiles are just so fun to handle.
They are.
I am a Texas Hold'em player, and I love to shuffle chips. And I'll tell you, handling these—I mean, I can't really shuffle these—but handling these little tiles is so cool. You, though, sir, are the abstract king. Even though I have played this game,
you've played this game way more than
way more than you have, because you've only gotten recently introduced to this game. But
right.
Introduce Hive. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, to tie a thread between our last review and this one, I would say the common theme is accessibility. Hive is an abstract that you can teach to anyone. So here's how it plays. I'm going to teach you the entire game in under a minute. You each have a queen bee. One of you is black, one of you is white. You take turns placing animals from your supply into your hive. There are 7 different types of bugs that you have in your arsenal, and they can all do different things. Once you've played your queen bee, you can start moving your bugs according to your different rules. What you're trying to do in the game is surround your opponent's queen bee from all sides, whether that's all your pieces or a mix of both yours and your opponent's. You are trying to surround your opponent's queen bee, and that wins you the game. It's a super simple game. You can teach it to someone in 5, play it in 10, and like no other, this game has the let's play again factor to it. I mean, especially, I feel like 2 players especially are prone to this, and this game, I've never played it just once.
Yeah. This, there are, I'm not a huge fan of abstracts, and not because I don't appreciate their design, but because I suck at playing them. especially ones that have to do with like spatial logic. I'm the kind of person that people love to play chess against, because I just...
Or Twixt.
You know, after, you know, when they put me in checkmate, I'm thinking, oh, okay, yeah, didn't see that coming. Hive, I see. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while to see it. I'm not saying it's a simple game, but mm-hmm. I see Hive. And mm-hmm. the way that this board develops, the fact, I mean, you're not playing on a board. The board, the Hive develops as you play these hexagonal tiles out. And there's this really fascinating rule, which is the meat rule of the game, mm-hmm. that you cannot break the hive. Mm-hmm. So if you have 3 pieces just lined up in a row and you want to move that middle piece out, you're stuck.
Too bad.
The only way to move that middle piece out is to get 2 pieces to the right of it, so that now that top piece and that bottom piece are connected, and you can slide that middle piece out and play it.
Right.
So that one little rule... Mm-hmm. makes this game so thinky, so heady. And there's this ebb and flow to the game, mm-hmm. where, okay, a person comes out really strong, really aggressive, gets their 3 ants out, starts boom, 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 surrounding your bee, And then they put another piece out, but you get it blocked. They put another piece out, and you get it blocked. And all of a sudden, their momentum has slowed.
Right.
And now things begin to shift. And right. now through some nuance and through some slight, you're able to take the advantage. And
right.
you can get this back and forth thing going that is really, really interesting. Now, for you, though, it's ended up in a lot of draws, I've heard. With
yes.
You were playing with your brother, right?
And yes. So... that's a tragic moment, so I don't want to get to that yet.
Okay.
I have more good to say about this game. Two things. I think I agree with you. The learning curve is very gentle.
Yeah.
I think for one thing, a newbie can hold their own in this game, and for another thing, they'll learn from losing very easily because the core pieces are very well defined. You see it happen once. Maybe your opponent uses that grasshopper or that spider in just an annoying way, or more often the beetle. And then you say, well, I'm never going to let that happen to me again. And because you have fewer pieces than chess, a smaller board than chess, you can very quickly start taking some of those same strategies that your opponent just turned against you three games ago and just take them right back to him. The learning curve is easy. And you start to see those patterns very quickly, and it's addicting. It's very addicting. And the second thing I want to say is I totally agree with you that the game has an ebb and flow. I think any good two-player abstract should be almost like a seesaw. You're just going back and forth. One person takes a big leap, and they push themselves up, and the other person, you know, you are bouncing back and forth, and there's this delicious push and pull, and you're just waiting to sink the dagger in. But it does end in a lot of draws.
Are you moving on to the tragic?
I am, unless you have more good you want
to say. I have one more magic
okay.
I'll say about it. So the other magic I like is are the expansions.
Really?
I think the expansions, I was really thinking about this. We're going to talk a bit about the expansions.
Mm-hmm.
I think correctly played, they add some interesting little variants to the game.
Okay.
I particularly like the ladybug.
Okay.
That, expansions are also going to be mentioned in the tragic.
Okay.
But the ladybug I'll mention in the magic. I like the ladybug. I think the ladybug by itself adds just that extra oomph to keep some of the draw problems from happening. So.
Well, I've never played the expansions, but I've heard the ladybug described as the knight of Hive. So I could see that flexibility coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the tragic moments with the expansions?
Boy, especially the mosquito, it's so... Okay, what made the original so delicious was that tension of, okay, I'm getting ahead of him, but I also know I'm running out of pieces, so I've really got to think this through.
Right.
The mosquito, the ladybug, and pill bug, I think if you combine them all, it's just sort of too many pieces on the board, and... It feels like the game can be more swingy with those pieces in it. A player who knows what he's doing can get a really strong advantage. I guess both players can.
Right.
That's available to both players. I get it, but I don't know. It felt too wide open with more than one extra expansion piece.
Gotcha. Do the designers recommend playing with more than one?
You know, I didn't see that written in my little. But it could be that they limit it.
Right.
But I didn't see that written in anything. Actually, there was just a description of what that piece did.
Right.
So I don't know whether they're just sort of leaving it to you. What I've wondered about doing, and I haven't done, is what would happen if I removed an ant and played the mosquito instead of the ant.
Interesting. Then you have fewer of your most powerful piece, but you have this other copycat.
That... Right. Or... kill a spider.
Right.
The ladybug.
I don't know. I don't like the spiders, but that actually brings me to a tragic moment, which is not entirely the game's fault, but does lead into the draw problem.
Mm-hmm.
I found this game susceptible to groupthink. Because it's so easy to just learn from what your opponent just did, I found that we were wrestling ourselves into draws an awful lot. So I think it's hard to develop a unique strategy. Like, for example... most of the games I've played, the spiders have not been very useful. Are they just a weaker piece? Maybe. Is there someone out there who's an expert on Hive who could crush me using just the spiders with one hand tied behind his back? Definitely. And I have not bothered to explore the depth of what the spider piece can do because I have not been forced to do that. by someone.
I have exploited that, and it took me a while. Mm-hmm. I think for new players, it's very easy to ignore the spider, and he's just kind of a placer piece.
Right.
But there are times when I have used the spider in a very surprise move.
Right.
And I have to be very careful because I can sometimes give it away because I have to sort of count out.
Right. It is the funkiest piece to keep track of the movement.
Try to figure out where it lands. But you can really use it as a spider to your advantage in some cases doing some really surprise moves with it.
Well, I'm hesitating to say this next bit because, again, I've probably only played this game about 14 or 15 times, which in the context of a 10-minute abstract is maybe not that much. It, definitely not enough to be saying strategy stuff. I found, and I played this with 3 or 4 different people, so I'm discounting the groupthink a little bit here, unless it's me, which it might be. I found that a stodgy, conservative, play your queen as the first piece strategy made for a lot of draws with a few victories sprinkled in there,
mm-hmm.
which I guess technically is successful. You know, you're not getting any losses. You're getting mostly draws and a few wins.
Did you say stodgy conservative play your B is the first piece?
Yes.
That's aggressive.
Because what was happening almost immediately is
like you throw your B out and then you throw your, I forget what's the name of the piece that climbs on top of the others. The beetle. Then you throw your beetle out next to it. You're throwing down. You're saying, come on.
I guess I'm not saying the queen first as the stodgy part. What ended up happening was the queens always ended up right next to each other in all the games we played. Wow. Most of the games we played, the queens would move close to each other, either one person or the other, and then we'd be stuck. We'd have that one simultaneous piece. So I was playing my queen first. That was my preferred opening, and that's how we were ending up with draws. So once I played that, I really slowed it down, and I was trying to really bleed them and trap their pieces. That always inevitably ended in a pinned together queen situation because I had put my queen so close to the front lines. So that opening move is aggressive, but we found that led to a lot of draws. So maybe I need to stop opening with that because it's against the spirit of the game. Maybe it's not. You know, I'm positive, in fact, that there's a strategy that I've not
exploited.
But it's weird
that your queens keep ending up together because most of the games with most of the people I play, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our queens are two or three pieces apart.
Well, what usually happened was the losing player would find a way to break that trap and then say, if I'm going to get out of this, I have to get close to their queen and kind of force a draw. That's what we found was happening. So again, see, when I started playing Twixt online, I very quickly unlearned a lot of my bad strategies, and I'm still not good at the game compared to the online players, you know. I wonder if the same is true of Hive, if it's just, you know, I've hit that initial gentle learning curve and maybe there's a steep cliff ahead of me that I don't see. Because I feel like I understand the strategy and yet I also see some propensity to some certain things.
I think there's a lot more depth there than you've hit yet.
I
think there's a lot more depth than I've hit.
Right.
And I'm sure I have probably 3 to 4 times the number of plays.
That's what I love about abstracts.
So, yeah. Well, save that for the abstractoganza or whatever.
And to put a nice bow on Hive, my last tragic moment is it is still an abstract. My wife's not going to play this one because she asked me to kill spiders. She doesn't want to bother with it.
I'll defend that a little bit by saying, and this is going to be like one of the questions in our abstract game podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But abstract games that have at least some theme or you feel some theme in it. Mm-hmm. It does feel, I know, ants and grasshoppers in the same beehive as bees doesn't really make any kind of sense at all, but sort of these hexagonal pieces moving about and these pieces that you're able to buzz around and the grasshoppers hopping up and over.
Right.
There's enough theme in there that I kind of feel it.
I agree with you. I think it's a thematic abstract for what it's worth, if that exists. But, you know, and I put an asterisk here in my notes, I think that's more the fault of abstracts than the fault of Hive. Because I think with the exception of Photosynthesis, this is the most accessible abstract that I own.
I would put it over Photosynthesis.
Well, Photosynthesis has that extra veneer of theme, which makes it more appealing to people.
Yeah.
So Hive is more clearly an abstract. That might turn some people off, but if you're listening, do not put aside this game. Do not ignore this game. I ignored this game for many years despite the oh-so-chunky pieces, because I thought the abstracts weren't interesting, and I have seen the light, and Hive is one of my favorite abstracts. I've really enjoyed it.
Before I do my final opinion of it,
okay,
I am going to give one more tragic.
Okay. We're going to end on a sour note, ladies and gentlemen.
No, we're not. Well, it'll end on a positive note.
Okay.
Just one, but there is one more little tragic I'd give it, which is that, and it's related to something you thought was magic, but mm-hmm. I don't, this I think I disagree on. Anytime I play this with a new player, I typically utterly trash kick them. Their tail.
Yeah.
And they are ready to just flip the table and walk away. And you have to kind of, you really have to govern that player's experience to say, look,
yeah.
this, believe me, three games into this, you'll have it. And that's the cool thing.
Right.
The game rewards experience,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't take very long to catch up.
Right.
Within five games, you can right. be holding your own
holding
against
your own.
A right. more experienced player. You may not right. win, you know.
The possibility to surprise them with a great move is there.
Right. So, but, so you just know that there is, it's not much of a learning curve, but you feel it the first couple of games. You
right.
just get trashed and you're like,
right.
You will feel the first time you play against an experienced player, it'll feel like they just put a piece on your B, locked it up, and then just boom, 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 boom around it. And you're thinking, how in the world can I defend against that?
And we need to play this game together because every time I've played it, I've been the more experienced player, except for the very first time I played it.
Yeah.
You know, so I need to
you need
run
to
the gauntlet.
Kill me at it because I'm more experienced at it, but you're better at abstracts. So, but.
It'll be a valiant
battle. All that said, though. Those to me are very minor tragics. Is that?
Yeah.
It's a minor tragedy. So, I really love this game. It's held a place in my collection now for, 3 years? Mm. And I've played it with children to adults. And
right.
I've played it with light to serious players. And it's so portable. And it comes in this wonderful little Ziploc. We're doing a lot of sound effects. I am. In this show. It comes with this beautiful, you know, Ziploc round bag. And
right.
You actually got the...
Yeah, I took the insert from the box and put it in the bag so my pieces stay neatly together.
Huh.
It's really satisfies my OCD. But yeah, I mean, come on, guys. Hive is eminently accessible.
I mean, it's
20, 25 bucks. You're going to play it and love it.
Yeah.
Even if you don't, you could take a flyer on this one and pass it on to a friend if it's not your cup of tea. You should try
yeah.
it out. And most of you probably have.
And it looks beautiful on the table.
It does. It does.
And it feels substantial and chunky. And it just feels like a game. So,
real quick, before we run out of time here,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about some of our recent plays.
Yeah. I'll let you start on this one.
Oh. That's disappointing because I have three that I'm trying to decide between. So
okay. So I don't have three, so maybe...
Okay.
Well, actually, you should start because you have more.
I don't know if I can talk about all of them. Tell you what. I'll talk about one, then you can talk about one, then we'll come back to mine and see what I've got here.
Okay, I'm going to bring up one that I wasn't going to bring up, but I think it's one of your three.
Okay.
Grimslingers.
Nope.
Really?
Yeah. I know, I want to talk
longer
about that
one at some
point.
We've been holding off a little bit on Grimm.
We're going to have a Grimslingin' Grimmstravaganza coming up here where we're just going to talk all Grimslingers for one episode because it deserves it. And the game's not getting enough press.
We just need to get further in the campaign. I know we've mentioned it in other podcasts, but...
I will say one thing about Grimslingers. I ordered on Shapeways a 3D printed cowboy meeple. Of polished red plastic to
cool.
walk around on the map because the Carcassonne meeple, I spent the $3 and upgraded it to something more thematic. So I'm pumped to keep going in the campaign. Just pre-ordered the expansion. I'm loving the story. Go check out Grimslingers.
Cool. Cool. All right. Well, I'll bring up a recent play that I had and I'm still having because
it's actually on the table.
It's
in front
on the
of
table
us.
Right now in front of us in between our two microphones is... Xayah, Legends of Idris System.
Xayah.
I'm excited to tell you...
Exia.
That... They make a cream for that, if you... okay, Andrew and I set this up to play the other night, and he had to take off. So, right after we set it up, he had to take off unexpectedly. So, the game is still set up, and I thought, well, I'll go ahead and take my first turn. I had an epic turn. I was sitting at the table by myself, and I had this epic first turn where I was in the center of the galaxy. So I'm playing with the Embers expansion, right? And I rolled an 11 on my engine because I souped up my my ship with a super high engine, but of course there's not any room for shields or weaponry, but I'm going to try to do some mining and make some money. So I souped up and I rolled an 11 out of the 12 for movement. So I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to go exploring the galaxy. So the first thing I explore, I hit an asteroid belt, but no problem. I'm able to make my way through that. The second thing that I explore, I do a blind jump. So you blind jump from sector to sector. So that means you get to reveal another like section of the universe. But when you choose to blind jump, you have to move your piece into the new sector that you reveal.
And if it's the sun, you're dead.
Yes, and if it's the sun, you're dead. And that makes for epically funny moments in this game. But although what I love about this game is dead isn't dead.
You can respawn.
Respawn, yeah. And it's cool. And they've actually made it easier with the expansion because really? you don't. It used to be you respawn, you lose your next turn, and then you start playing again. Now you don't lose your next turn.
No longer you lose your turn.
So
that's right. Yeah.
It's really cool. But yo, so then I hit this. I forget what these things are called. They're like these death
anomalies.
Spirals. Anomalies, that's right. So I hit this death spiral, and I'm thinking, okay, it's got like two pieces. So as long as I don't roll a 12 on the first one, I'm fine. So I roll a 12-sided die, I hit a 12 exactly. So I hit the second part of the death spiral, and I'm thinking, okay, now it's only 6 to death. So I better not roll a 6. I roll it. It was a 5. I barely escaped with my life. But one of the pieces I picked up, one of the exploration tokens I picked up, damaged my ship. So I was able to do another blind jump out of there with the remainder of my movement. And I hit a planet with the planetary shield around it. And I had to make the jump.
You really put this engine through a lot on your first turn.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. And so I rolled for the first... I did the first roll, and I rolled a 9. A 10 was success. 9 was 9 was damage, so I had to put 9 damage on my ship. And the other piece of damage I had was an ice damage, which is naturally going to grow unless I get to end my turn on a planet where it would melt off.
Uh-huh.
I had no choice but to try it again. Rolled a 19, made it successfully through without becoming a bounty hunter, and that's where I'm starting my next turn. And I was sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I could actually enjoy, because I was so excited about that. I was just going to run the NPCs, take your turn, take my turn, take your turn, take my turn. Play this as a solo game. And you know how weird
solo games.
I hate solo games, and this is a game I'd play solo.
Yeah, that's high praise, ladies and gentlemen.
my heart was thumping playing a turn by myself at the table with this game.
You're beginning to see the light. Tim Hange, the day he accepted
solos.
It's got to
be the right game, though, man.
That's true. So, but we'll keep working on them. I've got some great abstracts.
That Nyrim thing you play looks really boring, but I haven't tried it. I haven't tried it, so.
Well, I'm going to keep pushing the envelope. Okay, I've got to talk about the impression that I'm most excited about. I mentioned in the review, can we talk about Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective? Ladies and gentlemen, I have never seen a game accomplish so much with so little in the box. This is a couple notebooks and a paper map of London. There are no components to speak of except your brain. And somehow you have to piece together all of these clues. You have to solve these impossible cases. You have to go to these locations that don't give you anything helpful except for one tiny crumb. And you say, well, maybe it was this guy because he has a Cocker Spaniel. But no, the murder victim was allergic to dogs, so it couldn't have been him. Dang it!
Mm-hmm.
And to add insult to injury, as you're going, you know that Sherlock Holmes solved this case in an impossibly small number of leads. Every time you visit a new location, it's a lead. And you're trying to beat the master. He solves these cases in 6 leads, 8 leads. Do you want to know how many leads I took on my first game? 31.
Wow.
24 on my second game. My first score was in the negatives. Sherlock's score is always 100. My first score was negative 10.
Wow.
My second score was 30, and that was only after 2 hours and 45 minutes of racking my brain with my wife. We actually, we started on the table. We continued playing the game on the couch. And then as it got later, we got in bed, we pulled up the covers, we drank tea, and we just kept, by that point, we just had the clue book and our own notebook of notes. And we're just trying to figure out what in the world happened to this actor who got murdered. And wow, okay. This looked like the sort of game I would enjoy, but I had no clue I would enjoy it this much.
I have played half a game of this.
Okay.
Half of an episode. I think half. I mm-hmm. don't know how close we're to actually solving it. But I'll say this. You have to play with the right person or people.
Right.
And, of course, you can play this on your own.
Yeah.
But
I would play this solo.
Think long and hard about who you invite to play this with you.
Yeah.
Because it's going to need to be somebody with an attention span, somebody who's not going to be easily discouraged
right.
and get cranky at the game and yeah. just turn the whole thing off.
No, I would play this with close friends, but man, mm-hmm. when you do, what an experience. I told Alicia that I was thinking of playing this solo, and she said, no, you don't. I want to play all 10 of these cases with you. I'm not letting you play any of them solo. You're going to have to buy a second box with different cases.
I remember several years ago, I laughed because the complaint against this game used to be, well, it's not a game you can keep on your shelf forever. You solve it once and then you throw it away. And that was the criticism. And now that we've had a host of legacy games come out,
yeah.
it just seems like such an empty, niggling complaint yeah. to bring
not
up.
Not to
this
mention
game.
Space Cowboys, who published this version. Oh, they
can, the new version of Space Cowboys.
Yeah, they can do the looks. These guys did Time Stories. The new box is chunky. It's substantial. In addition to a new coat of paint, all of the cases and maps and directories have been given multiple passes for typos. So these are the most complete and error-free versions of the cases that you've ever seen. In fact, I'm not even playing the original box, the one that originally came out in 1981. I'm actually playing the second box that they released, which is brand new cases from 2017. And there's even a third box out. Ladies and gentlemen, that is, if you're keeping track at home, 10 cases within one box, which retails for $50. Each case, which will occupy you for anywhere from an hour to 3 hours, depending on how fastidious you are, you do the math on how many hours of entertainment you're getting at what price. This is better value than a Little Caesar's pizza.
And of course, the new version updated the mechanic too, right? They streamlined it. They changed how the original played, correct? Wrong! And that's my point. Guys, this is, I mean, I'm throwing back a little bit to a theme that uh-huh. that came up in our last episode and keeps recurring.
Uh-huh.
How do these great ideas fall by the wayside?
I wouldn't say this game's by the wayside. This is ranked 50 on Board Game Geek. This is pretty well respected.
Okay, but how many other people are doing this kind of game?
That's true. Actually, Space Cowboys would be the first example I'd point to with Time Stories. I think Time Stories draws a lot of inspiration from this game.
That's true.
But, you know, you're right. Shut Up and Sit Down pointed that out in their review. They said, it's a shame that our two best storytelling games, Arabian Nights and Sherlock Holmes, both came out in the 80s. It's
right.
been 30 years since we got anything in this vein. I would say Time Stories is definitely the most notable example in the recent, you know, past couple years, and which I am dying to try. I am convinced after playing Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, I had doubts about Time Stories because you can't play it again. But you know what?
Okay, but see, here's the thing with Time Stories, though, is that you pay your, well, supposedly $50 retail, but you get it a lot for a lot less than that with Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, and you go, what, 10 cases?
Mm-hmm.
And Time Stories is like, here's a new case, $30.
That's true.
Come
However,
on, really?
What do you think the people who have already played them are doing with them? My gut would say that there's a pretty healthy secondary market there for people who've already played the case
yeah.
and pass it on. You're right, though. And what's fascinating about Sherlock Holmes over Time Stories is that it does all of these different cases with the exact same materials. You're looking at the same map of London. You're even interacting with some of the same people from case to case. Holmes is reliable, you know, informers. So you'll go to the library and you'll say, okay, you've really got to help me out this time because last time you were no help. Or this happened to us. On the first case, we got a huge lead from going to the carriage depot, the taxi depot, and we found the movements of all the characters. And we went back there at the second case, and they said, what do you think we are, miracle workers? You think we can track the location of everyone in London? It's a big city, mate. And we said, oh, I guess that's not, you know, something we can exploit every time. It feels like an actual city, y'all. It is. Wow. This feels so premature to say, but this could definitely crack my top 10. This could be a top 3 game for me.
Do I need to get out the defib machine or something over there?
I might have a heart attack, and I don't want to be seen as unfaithful to Glory to Rome, you know. But, ladies and gentlemen, Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective is really, really good. It is definitely my number one storytelling game.
Yeah.
I have been floored by this game. So if any of that gush
number one storytelling game, number one storytelling Grimslingers. Game.
What's that?
Even over Grimslingers.
Yeah, man, I love Grimslingers. And I've been looking for good storytelling games, and thank goodness I have found some lately.
Next thing that I wanted to do wasn't really a recent play. It's sort of a recent going through a game and getting ready to play it again. A few episodes back, we mentioned Doomtown Reloaded, and I mentioned Doomtown just in general as a game that I have been invested in now for over, 17 years. I kind of was bemoaning the fact that it had gone the way of the dodo yet again and that it was a dead game. It is not dead, folks. I need to really recant and show a little bit of embarrassment, too, for somebody who is such a fan of this game to not have known this.
Did you miss the Kickstarter?
I think the Kickstarter is still going.
Ah.
But there is a...
Vassal's Law, ladies and gentlemen.
I guess. No, I did miss the Kickstarter. Okay.
You just heard the sound of remorse.
You know what? Don't put that
in. Regret.
I feel really embarrassed about that. Let me start this portion again. Okay. So I did mention a few podcasts back that Doomtown Reloaded, I said, kind of had gone the way of the dodo. And I really feel embarrassed that I have missed this. But there has been a whole transition of this game to Pinebox Entertainment. It looks like...
Oh, yeah, I've heard of them. They've done...
The Doomtown Reloaded Kickstarter for the There Comes a Reckoning expansion pack. You know, for somebody who thought that the game was dead, I'm really relieved to hear that it's not. And if I look at Pinebox Entertainment, I'm going to say something that is completely unvalidated, so I could be absolutely wrong.
Okay.
But this looks like a small startup company that is pretty much centered around this one game.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be more pleased. This game has kind of a cult following, and it needs kind of a cult company, that sounds bad, it needs a company with that with that kind of commitment to this game to really keep it going. I don't know if the expansion was profitable. I really hope to see a lot more from Pinebox Entertainment on this. It's a relief to me that this game is not dead, but this game is one of the most beautiful and inaccessible games I've ever played in my life, but I love it so much I will still keep it in my collection. So I was just flipping through the cards the other day, getting an itch to build some decks and go at it again, so it's not really a recent play. It's more of a recent
find someone itch. To hook on it.
But yeah. Well, you like the Weird West universe.
Yeah, that's true. Although, man, LCGs or RDNLCGs, recently deceased now living card games, are not my cup of tea.
Yeah, and I know why. Because of the time investment and the metagame.
Right. It's the same reason I don't play video games. I just don't have the time.
So I had a thought about how to do this, and I'm curious whether any of our listeners have ever tried something like this. And I wonder if the hobby could benefit from some of this, right? Uh-huh. Instead of, like, say you play Android Netrunner, and you have friends who've played it once or twice, and you say, you know what, I kind of like the game, but I'm not going to invest time into building decks. So what happens if you build a set of decks?
Huh.
And you choose them randomly.
So Smash Up meets Doomtown Reloaded, almost. Like, well, pre-constructed decks that you draft.
Or you can draft them, but the key thing is that the person who built them doesn't have the agency necessarily to choose the first one.
Right, and it's, the person who built them maybe worked to balance them. You could even do it community.
That's what I'm saying. Community crowdsourced. That way, what's happening is that the person who builds them says, well, if I get stuck with this one, I need it to be balanced against this deck too. So there's not this motivation to create the super deck and try to find that broken combo that's going to beat everybody else.
Yeah.
There's just this motivation to create a much better balance. Basically, what you're doing is you're creating super starting decks. Starting decks that are actually fun to play.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, well, isn't that the publisher's job?
Yeah, well,
I don't know. If you're willing to do all that work to create balanced decks, an actual game instead of an LCG, not that LCGs are not actual games, but if you're willing to put in the work to make it a traditional game where you just pick the sets, then sure, I think that could work.
When you say, is that the publisher's job? Well, see, here's the thing, though. There are a lot of people who like the very thing you don't like about it.
Yeah, I realize that, and that's why I'm not going to pan a game that's not my speed.
Yeah.
But it's also the same reason I'll never get into Ashes, Rise of the Phoenixborn, or Codex, Card Time Strategy, whatever other player versus player duel games that rely on deck construction.
And in the end, that is the problem with LCGs for a person who has a bunch of games in their collection. You just don't have time to play them all. And that's a bummer. But I do think that this approach is a valid option. So I'm going to give it a try. That's what I've been thinking about doing with
Doom. I'll try it with you.
So, all right,
if you do all the work.
All right, back on track.
Well, I have more games I would like to surface, but we had such a good discussion on Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, and Hive, our first two reviews on this channel, that I think we should just wrap it up there. Put a bow on this bonnet.
Very good. So, we are getonboard.games. You can look up our podcasts on our website. You can find us on Board Game Geek. I am the Board Game Greek on Board Game Geek. Andrew is, what are you, AAJ94?
AAJ94, the uncreative username invented. And we now have a guild on Board Game Geek, and we are listed as an official podcast. So, you can find us on those sub parts of Board Game Geek as well.
Thank you for spending some of your time listening to two guys who love games.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Tim.
And you've been listening to Get On Board.